Bliss shook her head. I don't think she was. She is under enormous tension, something I was not aware of until after the concert. It existed before you asked her about the stars.
Because she gave away her flute, then?
Perhaps. I can't tell.
She turned to Phelim.
Now, Phelim, I want you to go into your room. When you're ready for bed, go to the outhouse, use the potty, then wash your hands, your face, and your teeth.
I would like to play the flute, Bliss.
Just for a little while, and very quietly. Do you understand, Phelim? And you must stop when I tell you to.
Yes, Bliss.
The three were now alone, Bliss in the one chair, and the men sitting each on his cot. Bliss said,
Is there any point in staying on this planet any longer?
Trevise shrugged.
We never did get to discuss Earth in connection with the ancient instruments, and we might find something there. It might also pay to wait for the fishing fleet to return. The men might know something the stay-at-homes don't.
Very unlikely, I think, said Bliss. Are you sure it's not Hiroko's dark eyes that hold you?
Trevise said impatiently, I don't understand, Bliss. What have you to do with what I choose to do? Why do you seem to arrogate to yourself the right of sitting in moral judgment on me?
I'm not concerned with your morals. The matter affects our expedition. You want to find Earth so that you can finally decide whether you are right in choosing Galaxia over isolate worlds. I want you to so decide. You say you need to visit Earth to make the decision, and you seem to be convinced that Earth revolves about that bright star in the sky. Let us go there, then. I admit it would be useful to have some information about it before we go, but it is clear to me that the information is not forthcoming here. I do not wish to remain simply because you enjoy Hiroko.
Perhaps we'll leave, said Trevise. Let me think about it, and Hiroko will play no part in my decision, I assure you.
Pellerat said, I feel we ought to move on to Earth, if only to see whether it is radioactive or not. I see no point in waiting longer.
Are you sure it's not Bliss's dark eyes that drive you? Said Trevise, a bit spitefully. Then, almost at once, No, I take that back, Janoff. I was just being childish. Still, this is a charming world, quite apart from Hiroko, and I must say that under other circumstances I would be tempted to remain indefinitely. Don't you think, Bliss, that Alpha destroys your theory about isolates?
In what way? Asked Bliss.
You've been maintaining that every truly isolated world turns dangerous and hostile.
Even Camporeon, said Bliss evenly, which is rather out of the main current of galactic activity for all that it is in theory an associated power of the Foundation Federation.
But not Alpha. This world is totally isolated, but can you complain of their friendliness and hospitality? They feed us, clothe us, shelter us, put on festivals in our honor, urge us to stay on. What fault is there to find with them?
None, apparently. Hiroko even gives you her body.
Trevise said angrily, Bliss, what bothers you about that? She didn't give me her body. We gave each other our bodies. It was entirely mutual, entirely pleasurable. Nor can you say that you hesitate to give your body as it suits you.
Please, Bliss, said Pellerat. Golan is entirely right. There is no reason to object to his private pleasures.
As long as they don't affect us, said Bliss obdurately.
They do not affect us, said Trevise. We will leave, I assure you. A delay to search further for information will not be long.
Yet I don't trust isolates, said Bliss, even when they come bearing gifts.
Treviz flung up his arms. Reach a conclusion, then twist the evidence to fit. How like a...
Don't say it, said Bliss dangerously. I am not a woman. I am Gaia. It is Gaia, not I, who is uneasy.
There is no reason to...
And at that point, there was a scratching at the door.
Treviz froze. What's that? He said in a low voice.
Bliss shrugged lightly.
Open the door and see. You tell us this is a kindly world that offers no danger.
Nevertheless, Treviz hesitated, until a soft voice from the other side of the door called out softly,
Please, it is I.
It was Hiroko's voice. Treviz threw the door open. Hiroko entered quickly. Her cheeks were wet.
Close the door, she gasped.
What is it? Asked Bliss. Hiroko clutched at Treviz.
I could not stay away. I tried, but I endured it not. Go thou, and all of you. Take the youngster with you quickly. Take the ship away, away from Alpha, while it is yet dark.
But why? Asked Treviz.
Because else wilt thou die, and all of you.
84. The three outworlders stared frozenly at Hiroko for a long moment. Then Treviz said,
Are you saying your people will kill us?
Hiroko said, as the tears rolled down her cheeks,
Thou art already on the road to death, respected Treviz, and the others with you. Long ago, those of learning devised a virus, harmless to us, but deadly to outworlders. We have been made immune.
She shook Treviz's arm in distraction.
Thou art infected.
How?
When we had our pleasure, it is one way.
Treviz said, But I feel entirely well.
The virus is as yet inactive. It will be made active when the fishing fleet returns. By our laws, all must decide on such a thing, even the men. All will surely decide it must be done, and we keep you here till that time, two mornings hence. Leave now while it is yet dark and none suspects.
Bliss said sharply,
Why do your people do this?
For our safety. We are few and have much. We do not wish outworlders to intrude. If one cometh and then reporteth our lot, others will come. And so, when, once in a long while, a ship arriveth, we must make certain it leaveth not.
But then, said Treviz, why do you warn us away?
Ask not the reason. Nay, but I will tell you, since I hear it again. Listen.
From the next room they could hear Phalum playing softly and infinitely sweetly. Hiroko said,
I cannot bear the destruction of that music, for the young one will also die.
Treviz said sternly, Is that why you gave the flute to Phalum? Because you knew you would have it once again when she was dead? Hiroko looked horrified.
Nay, that was not in my mind. And when it came to mind at length, I knew it must not be done. Leave with the child, and with her take the flute, that I may never see it more. Thou wilt be safe back in space, and, left inactive, the virus now in thy body will die after a time. In return, I ask that none of you ever speak of this world, that none else may know of it.
We will not speak of it, said Treviz. Hiroko looked up. In a lower voice, she said,
May I not kiss thee once ere thou leavest?
Treviz said, No, I have been infected once, and surely that is enough. And then, a little less roughly, he added, Don't cry. People will ask why you are crying, and you'll be unable to reply.
I'll forgive what you did to me in view of your present effort to save us.
Hiroko straightened, carefully wiped her cheeks with the back of her hands, took a deep breath, and said,
I thank thee for that,
and left quickly.
Trivia said, We will put out the light, and we will wait a while, and then we will leave.
Bliss, tell Phelim to stop playing her instrument. Remember to take the flute, of course. Then we will make our way to the ship, if we can find it in the dark.
I will find it, said Bliss. Clothing of mine is on board, and however dimly, that too is Gaia. Gaia will have no trouble finding Gaia.
And she vanished into her room to collect Phelim.
Pellaret said, Do you suppose that they've managed to damage our ship in order to keep us on the planet?
They lack the technology to do it, said Trevise grimly.
When Bliss emerged, holding Phelim by the hand, Trevise put out the lights.
They sat quietly in the dark for what seemed half the night, and might have been half an hour. Then Trevise slowly and silently opened the door. The sky seemed a bit more cloudy, but stars shone. High in the sky now was Cassiopeia, with what might be Earth's sun burning brightly at its lower tip. The air was still, and there was no sound. Carefully, Trevise stepped out, motioning the others to follow. One of his hands dropped, almost automatically, to the butt of his Nurani quip. He was sure he would not have to use it, but... Bliss took the lead, holding Pellerat's hand, who held Trevise's. Bliss's other hand held Phelim, and Phelim's other hand held the flute. Feeling gently with her feet in the nearly total darkness, Bliss guided the others toward where she felt, very weakly, the Gaia-ness of her clothing on board the far star. Part 7. Earth. Chapter 19. Radioactive. 85. The far star took off quietly, rising slowly through the atmosphere, leaving the dark island below. The few faint dots of light beneath them dimmed and vanished, and as the atmosphere grew thinner with height, the ship's speed grew greater, and the dots of light in the sky above them grew more numerous and brighter. Eventually, they looked down upon the planet Alpha, with only a crescent illuminated, and that crescent largely wreathed in clouds.
Pellaret said, I suppose they don't have an active space technology. They can't follow us.
I'm not sure that that cheers me up much, said Trevise, his face dour, his voice disheartened. I'm infected.
But with an inactive strain, said Bliss.
Still, it can be made active. They had a method. What is the method?
Bliss shrugged.
Hiroko said the virus, left inactive, would eventually die in a body unadapted to it, as yours is.
Yes, said Trevise angrily. How does she know that? For that matter, how do I know that Hiroko's statement wasn't a self-consoling lie?
And isn't it possible that the method of activation, whatever it is, might not be duplicated naturally? A particular chemical, a type of radiation, who knows what? I may sicken suddenly, and then the three of you would die too. Or if it happens after we have reached a populated world, there may be a vicious pandemic which fleeing refugees would carry to other worlds.
He looked at Bliss. Is there something you can do about it?
Slowly, Bliss shook her head.
Not easily. There are parasites making up Gaia, microorganisms, worms. They are a benign part of the ecological balance. They live and contribute to the world consciousness, but never overgrow. They live without doing noticeable harm. The trouble is, Trevise, the virus that affects you is not part of Gaia.
You say, not easily, said Trevise, frowning. Under the circumstances, can you take the trouble to do it, even though it might be difficult? Can you locate the virus in me and destroy it? Can you, failing that, at least strengthen my defenses?
Do you realize what you ask, Trevise? I am not acquainted with the microscopic flora of your body. I might not easily tell a virus in the cells of your body from the normal genes inhabiting them. It would be even more difficult to distinguish between viruses your body is accustomed to and those with which Hiroko infected you. I will try to do it, Trevise, but it will take time, and I may not succeed.
Take time, said Trevise. Try.
Certainly, said Bliss.
Pellerat said, If Hiroko told the truth, Bliss, you might be able to find viruses that seem to be already diminishing in vitality, and you could accelerate their decline.
I could do that, said Bliss. It is a good thought.
You won't weaken, said Trevise. You will have to destroy precious bits of life when you kill those viruses, you know.
You are being sardonic, Trevise, said Bliss coolly. But, sardonic or not, you are pointing out a true difficulty. Still, I can scarcely fail to put you ahead of the virus. I will kill them if I have a chance, never fear. After all, even if I fail to consider you,
and her mouth twitched as though she were repressing a smile,
then certainly Pellerat and Phalum are also at risk, and you might feel more confidence in my feeling for them than in my feeling for you. You might even remember that I myself am at risk.
I have no faith in your self-love, muttered Trevise. You're perfectly ready to give up your life for some high motive. I'll accept your concern for Pellerat, however. Then he said, I don't hear Phalum's flute. Is anything wrong with her?
No, said Bliss. She's asleep. A perfectly natural sleep that I had nothing to do with. And I would suggest that after you work out the jump to the star we think is Earth's sun, we all do likewise. I need it badly, and I suspect you do too, Trevise.
Yes, if I can manage. You were right, you know, Bliss.
About what, Trevise?
About isolates. New Earth was not a paradise, however much it might have seemed like one. That hospitality, all that outgoing friendliness at first, was to put us off our guard so that one of us might be easily infected. And all the hospitality afterward, the festivals of this and that, were designed to keep us there till the fishing fleet returned and the activation could be carried through. And it would have worked but for Phalum and her music. It might be you were right there, too.
About Phalum?
Yes. I didn't want to take her along, and I've never been happy with her being on the ship. It was your doing, Bliss, that we have her here, and it was she who unwittingly saved us.
And yet what?
Despite that, I'm still uneasy at Phalum's presence. I don't know why.
If it will make you feel better, Trevise, I don't know that we can lay all the credit at Phalum's feet. Hiroko advanced Phalum's music as her excuse for committing what the other Alphans would surely consider to be an act of treason. She may even have believed this, but there was something in her mind in addition, something that I vaguely detected but could not surely identify, something that perhaps she was ashamed to let emerge into her conscious mind. I am under the impression that she felt a warmth for you and would not willingly see you die,
regardless of Phelim and her music. "Do you really think so?" said Trevise, smiling slightly for the first time since they had left Alpha.
"I think so. You must have a certain proficiency at dealing with women. You persuaded Minister Lizalore to allow us to take our ship and leave Camporeon, and you helped influence Hiroko to save our lives. Credit where it's due."
Trevise smiled more broadly. "Well, if you say so. On to Earth, then." He disappeared into the pilot room with a step that was almost jaunty. Pellerat, lingering behind, said, "You soothed him after all, didn't you, Bliss?"
"No, Pellerat, I never touched his mind."
"You certainly did when you pampered his male vanity so outrageously."
"Entirely indirect," said Bliss, smiling.
"Even so. Thank you, Bliss."
86. After the jump, the star that might well be Earth's sun was still a tenth of a parsec away. It was the brightest object in the sky by far, but it was still no more than a star. Trevise kept its light filtered for ease of viewing and studied it somberly. He said, "There seems no doubt that it is the virtual twin of Alpha, the star that New Earth circles. Yet Alpha is in the computer map, and this star is not. We don't have a name for this star. We aren't given its statistics. We lack any information concerning its planetary system, if it has one."
Pellerat said, "Isn't that what we would expect if Earth circles this sun? Such a blackout of information would fit with the fact that all information about Earth seems to have been eliminated."
"Yes, but it could also mean that it's a spacer world that just happened not to be on the list on the wall of the Melpomenian building. We can't be altogether sure that that list was complete. Or this star could be without planets, and therefore perhaps not worth listing on a computer map, which is primarily used for military and commercial purposes. Genoff, is there any legend that tells of Earth's sun being a mere parsec or so from a twin of itself?"
Pellerat shook his head. "I'm sorry, Golan, but no such legend occurs to me. There may be one, though. My memory isn't perfect. I'll search for it."
"It's not important. Is there any name given to Earth's sun?"
"Some different names are given. I imagine there must be a name in each of the different languages."
"I keep forgetting that Earth had many languages."
"It must have had. It's the only way of making sense out of many of the legends."
Trevise said peevishly, "Well then, what do we do? We can't tell anything about the planetary system from this distance, and we have to move closer. I would like to be cautious, but there's such a thing as excessive and unreasoning caution, and I see no evidence of possible danger. Presumably anything powerful enough to wipe the galaxy clean of information about Earth may be powerful enough to wipe us out even at this distance, if they seriously did not wish to be located. But nothing's happened. It isn't rational to stay here forever on the mere possibility that something might happen if we move closer, is it?" Bliss said, "I take it the computer detects nothing that might be interpreted as dangerous."
"When I say I see no evidence of possible danger, it's the computer I'm relying on. I certainly can't see anything with the unaided eye. I wouldn't expect to."
"Then I take it you're just looking for support in making what you consider a risky decision. All right, then, I'm with you. We haven't come this far in order to turn back for no reason, have we?"
"No," said Trevise. "What do you say, Pellerat?"
Pellerat said, "I'm willing to move on, if only out of curiosity. It would be unbearable to go back without knowing if we have found Earth."
"Well, then," said Trevise, "we're all agreed."
"Not all," said Pellerat. "There's Phelim."
Trevise looked astonished. Are you suggesting we consult the child? Of what value would her opinion be, even if she had one? Besides, all she would want would be to get back to her own world.
Can you blame her for that? Asked Bliss warmly.
And because the matter of Phalum had arisen, Trevise became aware of her flute, which was sounding in a rather stirring march rhythm.
Listen to her, he said. Where has she ever heard anything in march rhythm?
Perhaps Jemby played marches on the flute for her.
Trevise shook his head. I doubt it. Dance rhythms, I should think. Lullabies. Listen, Phalum makes me uneasy. She learns too quickly.
I help her, said Bliss. Remember that. And she's very intelligent, and she has been extraordinarily stimulated in the time she's been with us. New sensations have flooded her mind. She's seen space, different worlds, many people, all for the first time.
Phalum's march music grew wilder and more richly barbaric. Trevise sighed and said, Well, she's here, and she's producing music that seems to breathe optimism and delight in adventure. I'll take that as her vote in favor of moving in more closely. Let us do so cautiously, then, and check this sun's planetary system.
If any, said Bliss.
Trevise smiled thinly. There's a planetary system. It's a bet. Choose your sum. 87. You lose, said Trevise abstractedly. How much money did you decide to bet?
None. I never accepted the wager, said Bliss.
Just as well. I wouldn't like to accept the money anyway. They were some 10 billion kilometers from the sun. It was still starlike, but it was nearly 1/4,000th as bright as the average sun would have been when viewed from the surface of a habitable planet. We can see two planets under magnification right now, said Trevise. From their measured diameters, and from the spectrum of the reflected light, they are clearly gas giants. The ship was well outside the planetary plane, and Bliss and Pellerat, staring over Trevise's shoulder at the viewscreen, found themselves looking at two tiny crescents of greenish light. The smaller was in the somewhat thicker phase of the two. Trevise said, Genoff, it is correct, isn't it, that Earth's sun is supposed to have four gas giants?
According to the legends, yes, said Pellerat.
The nearest of the four to the sun is the largest, and the second nearest has rings, right?
Large, prominent rings, Golan. Yes. Just the same, old chap. You have to allow for exaggeration in the telling and retelling of a legend. If we should not find a planet with an extraordinary ring system, I don't think we ought to let that count seriously against this being Earth's star. Nevertheless, the two we see may be the farthest, and the two nearer ones may well be on the other side of the sun and too far to be easily located against the background of stars. We'll have to move still closer and beyond the sun to the other side.
Can that be done in the presence of the star's nearby mass?
With reasonable caution, the computer can do it, I'm sure. If it judges the danger to be too great, however, it will refuse to budge us, and we can then move in cautious, smaller steps. His mind directed the computer, and the star field on the viewscreen changed. The star brightened sharply, and then moved off the viewscreen as the computer, following directions, scanned the sky for another gas giant. It did so successfully. All three onlookers stiffened and stared, while Trevise's mind, almost helpless with astonishment, fumbled at the computer to direct further magnification.
Incredible, gasped Bliss.
88. A gas giant was in view,
seen at an angle that allowed most of it to be sunlit. About it there curved a broad and brilliant ring of material, tipped so as to catch the sunlight on the side being viewed. It was brighter than the planet itself, and along it, one-third of the way in toward the planet, was a narrow dividing line. Trevise threw in a request for maximum enhancement, and the ring became ringlets, narrow and concentric, glittering in the sunlight. Only a portion of the ring system was visible on the viewscreen, and the planet itself had moved off. A further direction from Trevise, and one corner of the screen marked itself off and showed within itself a miniature of the planet and rings under lesser magnification.
"Is that sort of thing common?" asked Bliss, awed.
"No," said Trevise. "Almost every gas giant has rings of debris, but they tend to be faint and narrow. I once saw one in which the rings were narrow but quite bright. But I never saw anything like this, or heard of it either."
Pellerat said,
"That's clearly the ringed giant the legends speak of. If this is really unique..."
"Really unique, as far as I know, or as far as the computer knows," said Trevise.
"Then this must be the planetary system containing Earth. Surely no one could invent such a planet. It would have had to have been seen to be described."
Trevise said, "I'm prepared to believe just about anything your legends say now. This is the sixth planet, and Earth would be the third."
"Right, Golan."
"Then I would say we were less than 1.5 billion kilometers from Earth, and we haven't been stopped. Gaia stopped us when we approached."
Bliss said, "You were closer to Gaia when you were stopped."
"Ah," said Trevise, "but it's my opinion Earth is more powerful than Gaia, and I take this to be a good sign. If we are not stopped, it may be that Earth does not object to our approach."
"Or that there is no Earth," said Bliss.
"Do you care to bet this time?" asked Trevise grimly.
"What I think Bliss means," put in Pellerat, "is that Earth may be radioactive, as everyone seems to think, and that no one stops us because there is no life on Earth."
"No," said Trevise violently, "I'll believe everything that's said about Earth but that. We'll just close in on Earth and see for ourselves. And I have the feeling we won't be stopped."
89. The gas giants were well behind. An asteroid belt lay just inside the gas giant nearest the sun. That gas giant was the largest and most massive, just as the legend said. Inside the asteroid belt were four planets. Trevise studied them carefully. The third is the largest. The size is appropriate, and the distance from the sun is appropriate. It could be habitable. Pellerat caught what seemed to be a note of uncertainty in Trevise's words. He said,
"Does it have an atmosphere?"
"Oh, yes," said Trevise. "The second, third, and fourth planets all have atmospheres. And, as in the old children's tale, the second's is too dense, the fourth's is not dense enough, but the third's is just right."
"Do you think it might be Earth, then?"
"Think," said Trevise, almost explosively. "I don't have to think. It is Earth. It has the giant satellite you told me of."
"It has?"
And Pellerat's face broke into a wider smile than any that Trevise had ever seen upon it.
"Absolutely. Here, look at it under maximum magnification."
Pellerat saw two crescents, one distinctly larger and brighter than the other.
"Is that smaller one the satellite?" he asked.
"Yes. It's rather farther from the planet than one might expect, but it's definitely revolving about it. It's only the size of a small planet.
In fact, it's smaller than any of the four inner planets circling the sun. Still, it's large for a satellite. It's at least 2,000 kilometers in diameter, which makes it in the size range of the large satellites that revolve about gas giants.
No larger?
Pellerat seemed disappointed. Then it's not a giant satellite. Yes, it is. A satellite with a diameter of 2,000 to 3,000 kilometers that is circling an enormous gas giant is one thing. That same satellite circling a small, rocky, habitable planet is quite another. That satellite has a diameter over a quarter that of Earth. Where have you heard of such near parity involving a habitable planet?
Pellerat said timidly, I know very little of such things.
Trevise said, Then take my word for it, Janoff. It's unique. We're looking at something that is practically a double planet, and there are few habitable planets that have anything more than pebbles orbiting them. Janoff, if you consider that gas giant with its enormous ring system in sixth place, and this planet with its enormous satellite in third, both of which your legends told you about, against all credibility before you ever saw them, then that world you're looking at must be Earth. It cannot conceivably be anything else. We've found it, Janoff. We've found it.
90.
They were on the second day of their coasting progress toward Earth, and Bliss yawned over the dinner meal. She said, It seems to me we've spent more time coasting toward and away from planets than anything else. We've spent weeks at it, literally.
Partly, said Trevise, that's because jumps are dangerous too close to a star. And in this case, we're moving very slowly because I do not wish to advance into possible danger too quickly.
I thought you said you had the feeling we would not be stopped.
So I do. But I don't want to stake everything on a feeling.
Trevise looked at the contents of the spoon before putting it into his mouth and said, You know, I miss the fish we had on Alpha. We only had three meals there.
A pity, agreed Pellerat.
Well, said Bliss, we visited five worlds and had to leave each one of them so hurriedly that we never had time to add to our food supplies and introduce variety. Even when the world had food to offer, as did Camporeon and Alpha, and, presumably...
She did not complete the sentence, for Phalum, looking up quickly, finished it for her.
Solaria, could you get no food there? There is plenty of food there, as much as on Alpha, and better, too.
I know that, Phalum, said Bliss. There was just no time. Phalum stared at her solemnly.
Will I ever see Jemby again, Bliss? Tell me the truth.
Bliss said, You may, if we return to Solaria.
Will we ever return to Solaria?
Bliss hesitated. I cannot say.
Now we go to Earth, is that right? Isn't that the planet where you say we all originate?
Where our forebears originated, said Bliss.
I can say ancestors,
said Phalum. Yes, we are going to Earth.
Why?
Bliss said lightly, Wouldn't anyone wish to see the world of their ancestors?
I think there's more to it. You all seem so concerned.
But we've never been there before. We don't know what to expect.
I think it is more than that.
Bliss smiled. You've finished eating, Phalum, dear. So why not go to the room and let us have a little serenade on your flute? You're playing it more beautifully all the time. Come, come. She gave Phalum an accelerating pat on the rear end, and off Phalum went, turning only once to give Trevise a thoughtful look. Trevise looked after her with clear distaste.
Does that thing read minds?
Don't call her a thing, Trevise, said Bliss sharply.
Does she read minds? You ought to be able to tell.
No, she doesn't. Nor can Gaia. Nor can the Second Foundationers. Reading minds in the sense of overhearing a conversation or making out precise ideas is not something that can be done now or in the foreseeable future. We can detect, interpret, and to some extent manipulate emotions, but that is not the same thing at all.
How do you know she can't do this thing that supposedly can't be done?
Because, as you have just said, I ought to be able to tell.
Perhaps she is manipulating you so that you remain ignorant of the fact that she can.
Bliss rolled her eyes upward. Be reasonable, Trevise. Even if she had unusual abilities, she could do nothing with me, for I am not Bliss. I am Gaia. You keep forgetting. Do you know the mental inertia represented by an entire planet? Do you think one isolate, however talented, can overcome that?
You don't know everything, Bliss, so don't be overconfident, said Trevise sullenly.
She has been with us not very long. I couldn't learn anything but the rudiments of a language in that time, yet she already speaks Galactic perfectly, and with virtually a full vocabulary.
Yes, I know you've been helping her, but I wish you would stop.
I told you I was helping her, but I also told you she's fearfully intelligent. Intelligent enough so that I would like to have her part of Gaia, if we can gather her in, if she's still young enough. We might learn enough about the Solarians to absorb that entire world eventually. It might well be useful to us.
Does it occur to you that the Solarians are pathological isolates, even by my standards?
They wouldn't stay so as part of Gaia.
I think you're wrong, Bliss. I think that Solarian child is dangerous, and that we should get rid of her.
How? Dump her through the airlock, kill her, chop her up, and add her to our food supply?
Pellerat said, Oh, Bliss. And Trevise said, That's disgusting and completely uncalled for. He listened for a moment. The flute was sounding without flaw or waver, and they had been talking in half whispers. When this is all over, we've got to return her to Solaria and make sure that Solaria is forever cut off from the galaxy. My own feeling is that it should be destroyed. I distrust and fear it.
Bliss thought a while and said, Trevise, I know that you have the knack of coming to a right decision, but I also know you have been antipathetic to Phalum from the start. I suspect that may just be because you were humiliated on Solaria and have taken a violent hatred to the planet and its inhabitants as a result. Since I must not tamper with your mind, I can't tell that for sure. Please remember that if we had not taken Phalum with us, we would be on Alpha right now, dead, and I presume buried.
I know that, Bliss, but even so.
And her intelligence is to be admired, not envied.